Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to episode 70 of The Brainstorm. We've got Nima with us from our genomics team. You know, normally, Nick, we're talking autonomous cars, sometimes DeFi, but now we've got autonomous labs and DeSci. Nemo, what on earth do those things mean?
Okay, yeah. So the kind of big picture statement here is that autonomous and decentralized science can truly disrupt the drug discovery process. And so obviously, I'm not making a bold statement here. We cannot really understand that the drug discovery as a process is fundamentally inefficient and flawed. And so how can we actually change that? And so first, we're going to start with explaining what is actually autonomous science. And so basically, when we talk about autonomous science, you should think about kind of game-changing blend of the AI and the robotics that promises us to kind of change how the research is done. And so think about like a self-driving car of the lab world where AI agents and robotic systems together working successfully and doing scientific experiments. And so it is also important to note why we are talking about this now. So this is not some future. This is already happening. So 2 weeks ago, there was a paper from Stanford from James O Group where they actually developed a virtual lab. And in that virtual lab, they used kind of AI agents, which kind of coordinated like a real research team where you have a PI, which is a principal investigator, you have PhD students, you have postdocs, and they have all different kind of functions. And their task was to develop a antibody from scratch for SARS-CoV-2. And they have done that in the record timeline. And also they developed some 92 different antibodies. And two of those were actually better than the current antibodies that exist already in the market for the SARS-CoV-2.
Wait, so Nima, just to understand, so I get, right, you train the AI, ask questions, it forces the non-PI PhD students to work way harder than it and get less credit. And then who sets up the autonomous lab, right? So it's like, to me, it makes sense. It seems like a lab is a much more constrained environment, almost like a factory automation. So I imagine there's human intervention and they're like, okay, this is what the AI decided we should test. Then you set it up and then it's just like a assembly line. It's like they're automated.
Basically, the person, I'm not sure, was it a PhD student or a postdoc who was in charge of this project? That person actually sets up AI agents who are going to have a different kind of functions in this virtual lab. So one AI agent is going to behave as a principal investigator who is kind of controlling everything. Other is going to be an immunologist because they're developing antibodies. Other one is going to be a bioinformatician or computational biologist who is going to actually doing that kind of part of the research. And the key here was that the person in the loop was actually having kind of individual meetings with all the agents, give them the task, and then kind of meet with them again to see where they are. And they also had a group meetings once per week where they kind of discuss the progress. So the person is actually kind of directing all of them in doing different parts of the task. And, you know, something like this for our regular PhD students would be a whole PhD work to develop antibody, I guess. And we're talking about 4 or 5 years of work because, you know, I'm a computational biologist, but like then I need to kind of partner with someone who is more on the wet side of the lab. I need to kind of bring, maybe if I need to validate some data, I need to partner with someone who is in the clinic and actually can give me the samples. And so here we are kind of replacing all those kind of people with kind of AI agents who can do the work for us. And then additionally executing experiments as well.
Okay, so this was the first of its kind, you think, from Stanford?
Yeah, so yeah, well, in academia, this is kind of first kind of showing that there is a kind of virtual lab. We have seen these things, for example, I have seen on Twitter, there are multiple examples of people actually writing the books in this where they have like 10 different kind of AI agents. One is going to be kind of focused on narrative, other is kind of focusing that, you know, there is no duplication, checking some other things that they're not kind of copying. But, you know, this was the kind of first showing in the academic setting. Though something like this, we have been seeing with one of our companies, Recursion. So Recursion in January actually presented their LLM system called Low, which basically enables them to kind of build this lab in the loop. And so basically their self-driving lab kind of uses their kind of proprietary LLM, which is called Low. And that system helps them to kind of hypothesize, experiment and analyze the data and all in a continuous automated loop. And by dynamically kind of refining experiments. And, you know, the Recursion before this system had about 36 kind of people involved in this process. Now it's only 2 kind of people kind of overseeing all of that kind of process.
How much do you think that this speeds up drug discovery and drug creation?
Well, so again, I'm just going to use the kind of Recursion as an example. You know, Recursion now in this kind of process can go from the target ID, where that's the first step in drug discovery, to having the kind of drug candidate for the clinical studies in just a couple of weeks and for a couple of millions. This before would be a kind of new biotech founded in the venture community and put like $200 million into this. And now we're doing this in a couple of weeks for a couple of millions. Bam.
Wow. So what would be the biggest hurdle then? You know, you have more drugs being discovered. Are there, you know, steps where AI can help down the value chain? Assuming, you know, once you have it, there's more than just discovering it, right? You have to go through all the hoops of the FDA and I'm not entirely sure, but maybe you can highlight what happens after and where there's more improvements to come.
Yeah. So obviously, the biggest kind of cost spend is actually in the clinical trials. So we kind of have the first step, you know, you do target ID, you develop a drug, you do preclinical studies, and then you go to clinical trials. So in clinical trials, that's where it's the most expensive and it takes the most time. And so there's a couple of things that there could be happening and are happening. So first of all, FDA kind of being more open for streamlining innovation. You know, like, can we imagine the future? If I had a kind of this lab in the loop, which kind of builds on the foundational model, and I come up with one drug which is approved, do I need the clinical trials for other drug? Can we just have, if the foundational model works and it's approved already, can we actually speed up some of the process? So that's one of the way that FDA could be kind of actually changing this. Other kind of approaches, and there are companies in this space, one of them is Unlearn AI, which are basically developing kind of digital twins, which significantly reduces the number of the patients needed in the clinical trials. Because a huge part of why the clinical trials are so expensive, because you're actually paying those patients. And so first you have to find them, and then you're paying them. And so with Unlearn AI, they have already shown that they can, at least in the control group, they can basically reduce the number of the patients to 1/5 what is already needed. And idea is that, you know, we'll be able to kind of create the digital twins, which could eventually completely replace the clinical trials. Which would be, you know, having these two things together would be like really boom, 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 boom.
But that seems like that's further out, right?
Yes,
like
that's further out. That's definitely further out. So we are still kind of focused on this first piece. And so, and I just talked about autonomous science, but there is now another layer that we kind of had to kind of add here, which is decentralized science. And so what do we think actually by that? So add to this autonomous lab, blockchain technology. And what this actually happens is that when we kind of bridge kind of blockchain with this autonomous lab, we are kind of the decentralized science is basically introducing transparency, collaboration, and kind of equitable access. And there are companies, again, on the private side, which are already doing this company like Molecule, they are definitely leading the charge. And they use the kind of blockchain based IP, which are wrapped in NFTs, to kind of fund the research and to share the IPs. And this is happening. I think they have about 34 projects funded now, because we, with DeSci, we actually want to remove the centralization, because now a lot of research is defined by NIH or other grants. And, you know, there is a lot of research that is not actually getting attention. So anyone in the world through Molecule can actually fund the research that they are interested in and then get the share of their IP. And other thing important here, you know, this is not just like some kind of, you know, crypto people doing it. Pfizer actually invested Pfizer Ventures invested $4.1 million in VitaDAO, which is kind of part of the Molecule, and they're just focusing on the kind of aging. And so the future that I want to see is like, I have this autonomous science, I have this kind of decentralized science together, how they change the drug discovery. You know, can we think about drug discovery almost like an app store where people throughout the world kind of using the blockchain to kind of have the kind of put the money or the funding and then get the part of the IP and actually push for the certain part of the research to develop the drugs.
Wow. That was a lot of both convergence and buzzwords. And
yeah,
it's
happening.
It's like a combination of excitement and also my knee-jerk reaction is like, okay, this seems like we got to be cautious too, right? It's like, as soon as you say NFT drug discovery, I was like, oh boy.
But it also sounds like, you know, there have been times in the past where you have a certain sector or a country that just kind of leapfrogs in terms of onboarding into new technology. And I think, you know, having listened to the genomics team over the years, it seems like this space has been very much stuck in the past. And now maybe it's finally that, you know, we're starting to wake up, or, you know, these scientists are starting to realize the power of unlocking and decentralizing and AI and everything Nemo just mentioned. And now they're just kind of leapfrogging, you know, the steps that they could have taken and just jumping right to, you know, the future that we've been talking about.
I would say that healthcare, compared to a lot of other industries, it's almost like the time when the classical music and Mozart and those guys were doing it and stuff. So it's just some few people are doing it and they can kind of perform it only live and you can only go and listen it like that. Versus like right now, like, you know, there's Spotify, like how we listen and share the music. Healthcare is still stuck in those kind of ages of kind of very kind of stochastic, you know, not industrialized at all. And you know, this is not putting blame on anyone. Like, healthcare is difficult because biology complexity is huge and it's really hard to do what they have been doing already. But we need to move from this kind of medieval ages to the actually 21st century.
All right. Yeah. Nemo, you invited the question. Who is the Mozart of genomics?
Ooh. Who is the most? Okay,
I'm company or person? Company or person?
Okay. Company. There are two companies that are Mozarts: Recursion and Tempus. But person who is a Mozart for me, and he's actually not a genomics person. It's Balaji Srinivasan. He's thinking about this space and how forward he's thinking and going with this. And even on the DeSci front is what makes me a Mozart for me.
Mm-hmm. From a composition standpoint, almost.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Gotcha. That's the right comparison.
Nice. Wow. So exciting. I feel like, to me, it also rings true somewhat with space too, although space less so now because so many people are excited about it, but it's like, it's not in your everyday life. So it's hard for people to comprehend what's going on and what's happening. But it's also, you know, it is interesting to hear Pfizer's making investments in this. Obviously that's good to hear. They're a huge company. They've got lots of resources. So 4 million is not huge, but it certainly shows it's on their radar.
Exactly. And, you know, for me, just I do like seeing those kind of, you know, big players who are not really driving the innovation usually in the drug discovery, kind of noticing this and actually kind of backing up some of these approaches.
And have you partook in any DeSci? What are you brewing up?
Well, I'm a huge fan of Molecule and what they are doing, And so I think that it's really going to remove the centralization part of the funding of the research in academia, and then it will kind of move to a drug discovery kind of space. You know, and there is actually another component here to also to kind of just kind of flag is, you know, we have seen now AlphaFold 3 and Google DeepMind open sourcing that. NVIDIA just open sourced its all BioNeMo framework, which is like multiple different computational tools, you know, for the drug discovery, which enables academia to actually have easy access to that. You know, that was also a huge problem. You know, academia generally has doesn't have a lot of money. And so this kind of open sourcing that I'm seeing as well, it's going to give me a positive kind of hindsight that actually this is going to come sooner than we think.
Nemo, you mentioned two companies, Recursion and Tempus. I think you talked a bit about what Recursion does, but maybe just high level overview of what each do in the space and what makes them the Mozarts of the time.
Absolutely. So Recursion is kind of a true kind of tech buyer company, which is kind of has been really focusing from the day one, how do we industrialize the drug discovery process? And so they have been mostly focusing on the first piece, which is the target ID and validation. And they just now acquired Existencia, which was focusing on the drug development kind of piece. And so now we have these two engines together, and they're the first one kind of using the AI advanced robotics to kind of do basically to make this kind of lab in the loop or self-driving loop concept kind of comes to the life. And so that's the Recursion. Tempus is coming from this perspective, kind of really focusing on the diagnostics. And, you know, when we think about diagnostics today, usually you're kind of very sick and then they do some test on you and then it's like a binary, you're sick or not, you have this disease or not. And Tempus is like, no, there is much more data to be collected using the sequencing and other methods. And because we can collect much more data, we can move from this kind of diagnostics, you know, do you have it or not, to be prognostics and predictive, which means like I can actually tell you what's going to be happening, and I can also tell you what kind of therapies are you going to be responding to. And so that's why like they are completely reimagining what is actually the space of the diagnostics, really focusing on the kind of big data and AI kind of together.
Amazing. Nemo, thank you for joining us and opening our eyes to a exciting future.
Yeah, very exciting.
It was a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.